Welcome. Welcome to New Realities. This is New Realities Radio, a takeoff on New Realities Television, and it's a program dedicated to exploring evolving human potentials in an evolving world. The series, now to be broadcast every Sunday at 9:30, explores the idea of how to become more conscious beings, how to overcome our automatic programming and take free reign of our bodies, mind, and spirit so we can inhabit and create a better world. This program is constantly on the lookout for new and different perspectives in achieving a greater and more peaceful reality for the planet. It's about embracing a synthesis of rational understanding with mystical awareness. And we must continually be on the watch for ways in which to enlarge our consciousness. And we must not attempt to limit our slice of the world which has been given to us, but we must somehow learn to transform and transfigure it. My name's Alan Steinfeld, and this is the premier show of New Realities. And New Realities is an organization and company and vision that I started in order to create a networking of spiritual events and politics and philosophy that circles the world. And part of the New Realities mission is, one, to create this television show that's been on for 15 years on Manhattan Cable, Time Warner Cable, every Monday night on Channel 57. Another recent event is to organize events in the New York area and around the surrounding areas, I suppose, and then also to send out a newsletter. So the first part of this program, I'd like to review some of the events that will be coming to the New York area. And if you are in the New York area or would like to be on the mailing list of events like the ones New Realities presents, then please email me at newrealities, N-E-W-R-E-A-L-I-T-I-E-S, at earthlink.net. My name's Alan, and that is the email to get on the email list. You can look up my website, which is newrealities.tv, www.newrealities.tv. And each month I send out a newsletter, so if you email that, if you email me, you'll be put on the monthly newsletter, and also during the month there is also different types of events that are about the spiritual renaissance, as Carolyn Meese just said. I just interviewed her and about her new book called Entering the Castle, and that program will be broadcast this Monday, that's tomorrow actually, and that will be at 9 o'clock on Channel 57 or WMNN. That'll be on MNN.org. You can listen to that on the internet. And if you can't get that, you have to download Media Player. But anyway, some of the upcoming events for April and the last week of March will be on Thursday, March 29th. Andrew Cohen, the founder of Enlightened Next, will be talking at the Lighthouse in New York at 111 East 59th Street. And he will be speaking about what is the evolutionary enlightenment for spiritual life. He says it's not peace, but it's perpetual development. Evolutionary enlightenment is about the ecstasy that compels us to create the future. And I think Andrew Cohen has a lot, his magazine, What is Enlightenment, is really a focal point in this emerging culture. And I think it's probably one of the best publications out there at this time that is really combining a new level of spirituality with science and philosophy, and looking at major thinkers every week, every issue, that is. He has a little thing with Ken Wilber, who I would say is one of the intellectuals of the spiritual movement. And he does have a lot to say as far as the combining of the mind with spirit. So that's March 29th, Andrew Cohen in New York, and if you, that will be $35 online, and you can go to enlightennext.org to order tickets. Also coming up is one of the major happenings in New York is the New Life Expo. New Life Expo is something that goes on twice a year at the New Yorker Hotel, produced by Mark Becker, and that is the best and the most outrageous and the most far out of healing, spirituality, nutrition in New York. And they also do an expo in Florida. So this Friday, it starts at 7 o'clock at the New Yorker Hotel. That is 8th Avenue and 34th Street if you are in Manhattan or are coming to Manhattan. And that usually starts with a vibrational healing panel on Friday night. I'll be speaking on Sunday about the nature of symbols and how symbols create reality. That will be 5 p.m. Alan Steinfeld in probably the I usually speak in the Chelsea Room on the fourth floor at the New Yorker Hotel. I think the admission for the whole expo is about $25. Also coming up, actually, Friday as well, is Dr. Stephen Chang. He is one of the great founders of the Western understanding of Taoism. And he's going to be presenting his understanding of, he wrote a book called The Great Tao, and he is truly a master, Stephen Chang. And he will probably be at, although it's not set yet, he'll probably be speaking at the American Conference Center. And that is 730 3rd Avenue. And if you want any more information about that, you can call 212-473-6388. Stephen Chang, the author of The Great Tao. That's March 30th in Manhattan. Also coming up, on April 5th will be, well, actually April 2nd is Passover and the new moon, and that's always a great celebration in wherever you may be. This is the planting full moon. That is usually why I would say these major holidays were picked, major religious holidays were picked around the seasonal understanding. Easter, Passover, picked around the full moon. Let's see, what else is coming up? Also, Star Fuentes, who is a shamanic healer, she'll be in New York on from April 2nd to the 7th, and she'll be giving her talks at the Meta Center, which is 214 West 29th Street. And if you have any questions about that, you can call the Meta Center, which is 212-736-0999, and her first course is, did you ever desire to connect yourself to the unique abilities of the historical spiritual teachers? In this extraordinary evening, you will get an energetic download of what the famous historical men and women, the high spiritual teachers, were able to bring to the planet. So Star Fuentes will help open people up to those levels of understanding. So, also, that is starting April 2nd, but on April 5th, my good friend Michael Jazz will be doing a course in the Art of Intimacy, and that is part of David Data. People don't know who David Data is. He is the new relationship guru. And there'll be a course about that in New York. If you have any questions about that, call 212-477-0522. That is the Art of Intimacy, and with a person named Michael Jazz. On April 6th, there's something I'm particularly presenting, New Realities Event is presenting an evening with Nicole Dadone, who is part of the One Taste Collective in San Francisco. She'll be in New York speaking about something called Beyond Tantra, Sensuality and Spirituality. And that will be at the Center Point Yoga Studios, 324 Lafayette Street. And if you have any questions about that, you can call me at 212-473-6388. Let's see, what else this month of April? It's a very busy, jam-packed month. Sandra Ray will be in New York April 18th to give a talk on how to liberate yourselves from patterns that no longer serve you and what you can do to create more harmonious, loving relationships. Sandra Ray is the founder of the Loving Relationships Training, and that will also be at the Metta Center, 214 West 29th Street, between 7th and 8th Avenue, and you can call for reservations 212-534-2969. I know I'm going through these numbers pretty fast, so if you have any questions about anything I have mentioned, just call 212-473-6388 or email newrealities@earthlink.net. Another big exciting event that's been talked about is this whole thing about the secret. Everyone's, you know, dishing the secret, they're promoting the secret. This person named Shiva Baba is doing something called Beyond the Secret. If you haven't seen The Secret, I would recommend seeing it because it does have some keys to unfolding new realities. The secret basically is the law of attraction. What you put out comes back. So an Indian teacher named Shiva Baba will be in New York on April 13th and 14th doing a course called Beyond the Secret, Secrets of the Enlightened Alchemists of India, the Tamasiddhas. Tamasiddhas were high spiritual teachers that particularly lived in the Tamil Nadu area of India, which is the south. And Shiva Baba is one of the inheritors of that tradition, and he'll be talking about how to go beyond the secret. Can your positive thoughts and emotions really bring you anything you want? Beyond feeling good and focusing on goals, there's a karmic reality that cannot be ignored. Anyway, Shiva Baba will go into more detail about the true laws of the secret. Also, April 7th, Bud Hopkins and the Intruders Foundation are back for another talk about alien abductions and the whole understanding of UFOs and what they're doing here. That will be at the ARE Center on West 30th Street. You can look up the ARE Center in New York. That's Bud Hopkins and the Intruders Foundation. Actually, the guests that I have come to New Realities, just a little technical glitch there. I'm not sure how much of that you heard of my announcements, but I'm going to go into the next part of the show. If you have any questions about anything you did hear, please email me, Alan Steinfeld, at newrealities@earthlink.net. And I want to introduce my guests for this evening who have been guests on my television show in Manhattan, and they are premiering on this radio show, and they're Dr. J.J. Hertog and Desiree Hertog. They are the founders of the Academy for Future Science, and their research takes them into linguistics, science, ET investigations, manifestations of all sorts, and they are really combining, and environment actually, and they're really combining science and spirituality. Hello, Dr. Hertog, are you there?
Yes, Alan, thank you. And Desiree is right by my side. We're very energetic. We know this is a premier program for you, and it's going to be a great platform for people throughout the country and the world hearing updates on so many important areas of spiritual and scientific development.
Well, exactly. And so I just gave a kind of overview of some of the things that are happening in New York, and I'd like to now lead into some of the latest hot news stories that you've been privy to and share that with the audience, because I think it's some very, very exciting things going on. So please share what you've recently heard.
Well, let's first of all start off with France, because we all know from my coast-to-coast program I made in January, I said that the French government would be releasing very important documents dealing with the question of ET or extraterrestrial science. And there would be 1,600 documents, and sure enough, that just took place this past week. Officially, there was an announcement that was made by officials with GAPON, in France that they indeed were releasing these 1,600 documents for public review, and some of this would be also on the internet for those who wanted to evaluate and come to their own private conclusions. So to me, this is a very important step of the major governments of the world to have a major country, France, come to the fore after 50 years and say, look, world citizens, this is what we have found, that this is a real subject, extraterrestrial and civilization, and intelligence is for real. Its impact on our society, as far as we can determine, is up front, and it's not interfering with French national security, and that other evaluations will be made from other sectors of science and society.
Well, so let me just ask you, these are documents that the French government has been collecting from what, their own investigations or people reporting UFO sightings? What exactly are
these documents? Hi, Alan, I'm going to join in on this one.
Oh, this is Desiree Herzog.
There's about 1,600 cases that have been registered with this French agency, and it comes off of a branch of what's called the CNES, which is the Center for Science in France.
Similar to NASA.
And so GAPON is the subdivision of that, almost like we had our Project Blue Book with Alan Hynek and the whole team there. Although instead of putting it down like Project Blue Book did, they just simply stored it in their files and let certain people and investigators look at it, mostly on government levels. Now they're willing to release it. So since 1954, they've stored these documents, and about 25% of them are classified as Type D, as in Debbie. And
which
that
means what?
Despite all the data and credible witnesses, they can't say that these things are not some sort of unexplained phenomena. And it's these type of cases that they're really looking at. Like people, mostly eyewitnesses. One was that they reported in 1981, there was a guy in Provence, southern France, who heard the sound, saw the vehicle. It actually landed in his field about 50 meters away. He said it was dull zinc gray. It was saucer-shaped. You know, he reported to the police. There was burn marks in the field. It's very hard to say this is some sort of, you know,
mind over matter.
Yeah.
Foggy fertility type of event that was staged by local authorities.
Right.
And of course, we know that there are other more serious trackings that have been made by those in radio control towers, traffic control towers, the airline pilots, and those on the ground from all sides of France have looked at this very important subject. And Desiree used the word phenomena in the plural, which means it's not just one type of event of plasma balls or ball lightning or some type of intriguing swamp gas, as the late Dr. Alan Hynek would call it, technical put-down, but rather this is something that has been seen by multiple witnesses, has gone through the shower test of the French experts, and has brought the government to realize it had to be candid, upfront, and honest about all of the information its experts had collected.
But, Alan, I have to say, this is not the first government to release data.
Oh, it's not, because I wanted to say, what does this mean that now governments are coming forward? Are they acknowledging that this phenomena actually exists? I mean, what does it mean that they're releasing these documents? Are they saying yes?
Well, that's the problem. They're not really acknowledging that these things exist. They're just putting it out to the public saying we're declassifying information. Spain did this in the 70s and really released some stupendous documents that were from military pilots and other types of pilots with pictures and data. But people just ignored it, even though these people were saying, we saw this object flying, we saw how it disappeared, we saw how fast it was going. These are military pilots. People still ignored it. Then Brazil, just in 2004, released to some of their credible UFO experts several important documents, and it got published. But really, still people somewhat ignored it. Belgium has done this. The UK has done this.
And Russia, of course, with its great declassified KGB documents that take people only through the 50s. But
and
what I feel important here is that the French government is willing to let people come to their own conclusions. So, as Desiree said, they have not given any official analytic bottom line here, because I believe that one cannot come from the level of traditional science. And they being wise, that is to say the French authorities, have allowed the general public to come to their own conclusions, of which there will be many, because the case studies vary from one level of modality to another. I happen to know several of the members of GAPON. I knew also Claude Puer and Jacques Poulet, who had testified to Kurt Waldheim in the private meeting in 1979 on the nature of events that were being tracked at that time and considered very, very serious. So all I can say from my vantage point is we're very pleased and proud of those experts in the French camp who have said to the Western world, we've done our part, now it's your turn to come.
You know what Desiree said is that there's all these governments that have done this in the past and people have ignored the actual facts, the actual eyewitnesses that this phenomenon has existed. So what does it, you think, both of you think it will take for the planet to wake up and embrace this phenomenon, which is obviously happening?
I think it will cause, that is to say, the accumulated evidence coming from serious top-level government sources, a re-examination of the whole spectrum leading to a new astronomy, and perhaps, and more importantly to all of this, a new psychology of who we are as a human society, as a human race, as an evolutionary culture that is surrounded by other evolutionary perspectives and realities. It means we have to change our mindset, and it means that we have to see what I believe to be a transformative side of the natural sciences, the consciousness dimension of the mind and spirit, and what we would call historically the oriental or spiritual sciences that accept the reality of other worlds and other realities, to borrow your term, new realities.
So that's the main question, is what is the actual inner psychology, in the sense that UFOs are really, they're not going to be discovered from the outside. They also, they sort of have to be discovered from the inside. We have to embrace the psychology of who we are as not just limited Earth beings. We have to embrace a new psychology, like you said. I love that expression, because it is with the new understanding of who we are, that's the only way I think we'll recognize something also outside of us.
Yeah, and we feel this is why many governments have not released the information, because it's not simplistic. It's not just nuts and bolts. There's obviously the phenomena where these beings are able to go through walls, they're able to appear and disappear. They're almost like we're talking about new realities of fifth, sixth, seventh, even eighth dimensional intelligences. And we go, of course, in our lingo from extraterrestrial to what we call ultra-terrestrial.
You know, explain that, because I think that's a great term.
Well, the terminology that Desiree is using, lingo, I think the proper term would be psycholinguistic.
Yeah.
Interpretation of these events that are not simply in the material realm or what we will call extraterrestrial, that it require a physical spacecraft or energy technology, but ultra-terrestrial, meaning that they are so advanced that they are in essence in pure energy form, mm-hmm. and require no technology, no physical science, and violate the laws of thermodynamics and biology and biophysics as we define them. Mm-hmm. In essence, they're in a higher category of development, which would equate to what the ancients would call the avatars or the super angelic, that is to say the field of intelligence or the force of intelligence behind the force of intelligence, what I call in my lectures the myth behind the myth, or in the keys of Enoch, the coming of the higher ultra-terrestrial intelligence referred to Kabbalistically as the sons of light. Others would call them the daughters of light. Still others would call them the star intelligences that are beyond the stars. So we're looking at a completely new phase of science graduating into recognition that the physical science, the material science, mathematical computations and measurements, analysis through supercomputers over 50 years of studies cannot give its imprimatur upon these multiple events as being purely of the physical spectrum. We're looking at the physical as well as the non-physical, and this is, of course, the reason why the quandary, why the reluctance of some of the traditional authorities to release the information. Namely, they do not have the answers nor the interpretation, in many instances not even the experience to explain what I call the higher intelligence or the ultra-terrestrial dimensions.
Right, but you're talking about many different types of beings. There seems to be beings that are semi-physical, that relate to us within a physical domain, and then there's the higher dimensional beings which have a more spiritual quality to them. Isn't there a whole range of beings that are out there?
Well, I think this is what we're starting to awaken to. We do feel that this is a threshold point in our own evolution, and some of it has, perhaps some of them have fed us the information that has gotten us to this point where we really can take that next quantum leap, because we have to start growing up in the cosmos. And when we do this, we realize that we are part of a vast amount of intelligence around us. Now, some of it is good and some of it is bad, just like the energy on this planet. There's a duality. And, of course, people can question what bad is and, you know, what is a person ever bad or not, you know, but someone else could say they are. So there's all those levels of reality. But beyond that, not only is there the third dimension, but there's all these others. And it's just full and teeming with life.
And as Desiree uses the word to refer to, she's referring to higher categories of cosmic intelligence, not other governments.
But
what we're seeing here is the admission by other governments, including the Russian, including the Belgian, including the Brazilian, that these realities are so powerful that they can literally displace military satellites, they can shut down nuclear reactors, they can neutralize nuclear warheads, they can interfere and confound military operations. There seems to be, in much of this, a desire to look at the human experiment and to tell us that we as a humanity have to be careful that we're not taking the drift toward self-destruction through
technology. Deborah said that the universe is really teeming with life and that the dimensions themselves are teeming with life, and it's as if we've been, I would say, isolated within our consciousness from the rest of the cosmos. I mean, would you say we are been purposely put into a kind of quarantine?
Yeah,
well, the Keys of Enoch argued that we've been quarantined as a planetary society because of our misuse of knowledge and because we are psychically and spiritually imbalanced. That is to say, we see singularities of one-upsmanship in one particular nation state or one particular theological or philosophical line of reason as dislodging or subsuming others, and we need to look at a more harmonic statement of the many and the one rather than the one to the exclusion of the many.
Yeah, we don't think it was such a bad thing, because if we had been approached by extraterrestrial intelligence, say even 6,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago, and I think we were 6,000 years ago.
And some people say we have been.
All the time along our whole evolution, we ourselves as a species, at least on this planet, would not have evolved the same way. And so in a sense, we have to grow, we have to learn, we have to figure out who we are and what we're doing. And once we get to that point, or at least once we get evolved to a certain point, then we can make contact with our cosmic brothers and sisters in space. And we believe that even the Tower of Babel was part of that, that there was communication back in the old days, so to speak, to extraterrestrial and other levels of intelligence. And it was just too confusing for the people on this planet. We were becoming little pawns because there are different levels of intelligence. And, you know, who knows who to side with or what to do. We could become literally slaves on this planet, something like you find in Stargate series.
Well,
when Desiree uses the word brothers, she's referring to the brothers of light, those who are the ultra-terrestrial category, who respect human dignity, who have a cosmology of many worlds of interplay or harmonic connectiveness, and also recognize that there is a divine path in all of us that leads to a cosmic intelligence that is spiritual, not simply technical, mechanical, material that is entrapping us in the lower phenomena.
Right, but some people say we have already been a slave to a higher race. The Zachariah Sitchin books say that we are the genetic manipulations of the gods that came here in order to do their work. I mean,
if you follow the Keys of Enoch, and I know you're familiar with them,
yes.
We actually differ from that. Although we do feel there has been times, such as Genesis 6, where there was the Nephilim that were created, and even now with abductions, we feel there are periods of time when that's happened. But in terms of a species, we are a type of Adamic species that exists in space. So we actually, when we get out into space, we'll find ourselves throughout the cosmos as well. We'll find gray intelligences, we'll find reptilian intelligences, we'll find robotoid intelligences, but we also find Adamic. So it wasn't that someone came here and manipulated it to us to get to who we are right now. Basically, we were in space, and we came here, and we forgot our higher identity.
So we're not native to this planet.
We dropped off here and then got stuck.
Well, our genetic code was articulated according to the Keys of Enoch, which I want to say for the radio audience, if they're interested, yes, the book is still available. If they go to our website, keysofenoch.org, we've gone into a new edition with color plates, and it's available in 10 different languages, so people who are interested may be surprised to see that there's many, many confirmations taking place. One of deals with hyperdimensional space. One deals with different biological categories of intelligence that have been here in the past that we are examining presently, and that will also be connected with this great transformation of consciousness just around the corner. And also the keys spell out the importance of the expansion of our inner dynamic of consciousness, what some would call the human biocomputer that suddenly realizes it is a fantastic ability to connect with any type of mindset or language vibration in the universe. And through this higher connectiveness, some would call reconnection, the mind is made aware of its cosmic potential. Its God spark is awakened, and people begin to realize the inner meaning not only of the Kabbalistic text, but even the biblical text, which activate, if you read them very carefully, the image of a higher evolutionary Adamic sea that will awaken at the end of the planetary cycle.
Yeah, I just want to let the audience know that I am talking to Dr. J.J. Hertog and Desiree Hertog, the founders of the Academy for Future Science, the authors of many books on this transformation that's happening to the planet at this time as we go from a third-dimensional consciousness to a higher-dimensional consciousness. My name's Alan Steinfeld, and this is New Realities, and this is a radio show, which is a takeoff on my television show, which can be seen on the Internet at newrealities.tv. And so I just want to ask you, Dr. Hertog and Desiree, about this understanding of the new psychology. And you mentioned earlier J. Allen Hynek, who was hired by the government to debunk UFOs, but actually what happened to him is eventually he came around and said, we can't debunk this. This is true. There's something happening there. Do you know what actually initiated that transformation in this government-hired debunker to come around and change his mind?
Well, I was with Jay Allen in Brazil, and we went into several places of happenings and sightings mm-hmm. and new dimensional realities where we talked to shamans, we talked to social scientists, even charismatic Catholic priests who had experiences. And Dr. Hynek, a very, very thorough scholar who worked at Northwestern University before the Harvard University, mm-hmm. had some very, very powerful experiences, which he said to me and to his wife, he felt this was somehow connected with the coming of Christ. Meaning this in a deeper sense of the cosmic Christ. And his wife, Mimi, often said to him, why don't you speak of the spiritual significance of this when you come back to North America? And he said, well, I can't. I'm a scientist. Anyway, he was at the head of a great team of investigators, and surely his credentials would not mean much if he would slide into the area of spiritual philosophy and psychology. But it was several events that opened his mind to the realization that there were higher dimensional forces of intelligence, some of which were very, very profound and very, very positive from a spiritual sense of psychology, was suggesting the ordinary reality we perceive is not one universe, but a harmony of phases, of movements of an indefinite number of universes and cosmic realities. So that basically made him break ranks with the Blue Book team of Professor Condon and go out publicly and say the Blue Book was simply a $6 million cover-up. It was not really
he came out and said it was a cover-up.
See and acknowledge the fact that we had so many higher categories of intelligence connected with the human experiment, not just those that were physical, grotesque, and mechanistic.
Well, who was he? Was he actually a government agent at one point? Can you give it a little background? Because he's really a pivotal point, I think, in UFO studies, because here... So give a little background. Who?
Alan Hynek was a go-between the Air Force and the scientific community and what we would call the UFO experts at the time in the late 40s, early 50s. He was really the point person to investigate and to write about the physical EVs, the biological entities that had been retrieved at that time. And although much of this has to be acknowledged within due time and due process, I do not want to speak out of turn in terms of what his family would want his closest of colleagues to say, that clearly he was one who saw and operated on all sides of this most important phenomena and was well aware that certain things would have been premature had they been released at the height of the Cold War, not knowing the consequence, the psychological and certainly the sociological side.
So he was hired by the Air Force to look into the UFO phenomenon as it was happening in the 50s, right?
Correct.
Right. He started as an astrophysicist, and then he moved into being an astronomer. Mm-hmm. And I think at that point, they were able to pick him up for these government studies.
That's right, Patterson.
But then once he left that, he almost immediately started realizing, you know, that these things were real. There were a lot of events also coming out in the 60s and 70s that he personally investigated on his own, apart from Blue Book, because that had already been closed, and he started realizing that these things were very valid. And then he started the Center for UFO Studies, which
J.L. Hynek Center for UFO Studies in Chicago, which Jerome Clark and other good and thorough investigators continued. So.
And we used to hang out at his house with he and his wife because we used to go through Chicago back in the 70s, and he was extremely open to, as Dr. Tech said, knowing that there was more to extraterrestrial phenomena than just the nuts and bolts. And I think that was, he was really one of those pioneers. And, you know, he was the consultant for Close Encounters of the Third Kind. In fact, he makes a cameo in the final scenes.
Mm. So how?
In all due respect to our time, Ellen, I do want to shift to another topic.
Okay, but let me just
permit us.
Go ahead, but
the,
I just want to say that I just wanted to...
revelations in Egypt.
Wait, but before we get there, I just wanted to just kind of wrap up the fact that I mentioned A. Allen Hynek was because he really represents the quintessential place that we have to come to as a government and a collective consciousness shifting to a higher level of consciousness, you know, with personal experience. I think it takes personal experiences to really make a shift in consciousness. I think that's one of the things. We can't expect people to just believe without having an experience.
Right, and he was actually able to go before the United Nations General Assembly with Claude Poher, who was a French scientist, and really talk about the importance of these things. They had gotten Sir Eric Gehry, who was an ambassador to the United Nations or connected with one of the island nations of the Caribbean, to sponsor them, and they talked to Kurt Waldheim at the time and tried to get the United Nations more involved, but of course it didn't go that far, but it made a big stance in the UFO community.
Right, but it still gets ignored now, even though it was a big splash, and now it's still not being acknowledged.
You see, Alan, and the audience that's listening to this program, it's not physical data.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have tons and tons of physical data from every government in the world. But if you don't go through a consciousness transformation and see that the human race is but just one branch of a very large tree of knowledge, a galactic tree of creation, and understand the deeper significance of why we are in this body of three-dimensionality to learn the lessons of love and dedication to all members of the human race and understand the growing and learning process is not simply the purely scientific, but it also is the psychological, also is the spiritual, the biophysical, the paraphysical. Once you see all of these put together, then you have data without interpretation, without experience. And this is, again, why it's so important, why we have the Academy for Future Science, to bring out the tonalities, the sounds that we have had in our experiences with the ultra-terrestrial categories of intelligence. Those sounds, those vibrations, also were shared with many of the Indian shamans in the Amazon and Africa and other parts of the world. So there are key areas here of music, musicology, acoustics, and physics that are also important.
Right.
So
but
also
people,
what we do is we take the tree of life and turn it upside down.
What,
you know, most people
Desiree, before we get to that, I just want to tell the audience that we will be on upcoming future programs, we will be revisiting the whole idea of extraterrestrials, not the idea, but the actuality and the fact, and I will, you know, it'll be an ongoing series within this program, the investigation into UFOs and ET intelligences, and the other part of this program is also the second part of what you have to say, which is your investigations into archaeology and music, and those are also, so yes, please go into that. We have another 10 minutes to cover that
other area. Well, I just
want to
say that what we do is turn the tree of life upside down, which means that when you look at extraterrestrials, you're looking, many people think we evolved on this planet and then these other intelligences also evolved on their planet and maybe they're coming by and visiting us, but that's not the reality. What the reality is there's this cosmic citizenship, this cosmic brotherhoods and sisters of light in the sky, in the heavens, in the many levels, and that we have been down here for a while really working upon ourselves. And now we're making that reconnection. And one of the things that we think is helping us to make that connection is finding our past.
Right.
And if we find our past in things like the Great Pyramid, pyramids of China, understanding even why the pyramid is such a significant symbol throughout the world.
Well,
because
we never, those people didn't forget where they came from. It's only recently that we forgot our connection to the rest of the galaxy and who we are as cosmic brothers.
Exactly. So if you look at the pyramid, one of the key things is what we call in the Keys of Enoch the star shafts.
Mm-hmm.
And one side points to Orion, which has been popularized by Robert Bovell and Adrian Gilbert,
mm-hmm.
Adrian being a good friend of ours.
Right.
And the other side points to Alpha Draconis, which just shows you the circumpolarity of our universe. And our whole planet just goes around this kind of north star and is kind of caught in this serpent type of energy. And so on one side is that, and the other side is Orion, which to us is the Lords of Light or the higher levels of intelligence, almost the super gateway to these greater realms. So with that said, of course, what's interesting is Zahiawas in the last 20 years has tried to put robots up some of these little star shafts, and they're very, very small.
Zahiawas is the, I guess, the Egyptian overseer of the Giza Plateau.
Yeah, he's more than the Giza Plateau. He started that way, but he became actually the head of the Antiquities Department throughout all of Egypt. So whether you're talking about the Valley of the Kings, or whether you're talking about the Western Desert, Zahiawas is the head of the Antiquities Department. So he
so recently we decided to investigate the air shafts in the Great Pyramid.
Yeah.
Well, we were there. Zahiawas is head of the Supreme Council of Antiquities.
Uh-huh.
He is connected in so many ways with the leadership and the chain of command of all of the individual committees in both Upper and Lower Egypt. So he is the main point man or person of authority that has to look very carefully at all the proposals submitted by archaeological teams, etc.
So anyway, so as some of you know, back in the, I believe it's the 80s, Gottenbrink, which is a famous Rudolf Gottenbrink, put this little robot to go up. They know that the King Chamber star shafts go out and actually have no blockages all the way to the outside of the pyramid. But
actually, 93.
Okay, they could actually trace it out to the outside.
Which had some sort of blockage. So Rudolf Gottenbrink put a small little robot called the Upawat up the south star shaft, which is supposedly pointing in the direction of Sirius,
mm-hmm.
the star system. And it came to a little door that, and now we're talking about in this little star shaft that are approximately 8.6 inches wide in height. They're very, very, very small. And so this little robot went up quite a distance and found this little doorway with little copper handles, and it stopped. Then some years later, Hawass tried it again and wanted to drill a little hole through that door to see what was on the other side. When he did that, there was another door. So he was stuck again. Now,
8 inches wide, you said these doors are?
Us that Zahiawas is going to try a third time with a new team. So this is going to be very, very exciting to go up probably both the shafts in the Queen's Chamber.
And we're talking about not a little ways, but over 214 feet.
But if you
going
say
to
that
a mountain of granite, the mass of which is over 13 square acres, so So to put these small star shafts and to articulate them through the stones, which are of tremendous tonnage, in such a way as you would articulate the dials of a French watch or Swiss watch to point to a distant object, this being the belt of Orion 1,400 light years away, mm-hmm. requires a feat of imagination, mathematical skills, mm-hmm. and astronomic calculations that I feel would take about 30 Einsteins to put together. So this is the ground plan of the recent attempt now to probe where Gartenbrink and others left off in the 90s and in the early part of the 21st century.
Well, wait, if there's doorways there in the star shaft, how do they know they point to these stars?
Well, actually, because you can tell the alignment, which is something like a 38-degree alignment upwards from the Queen's Chamber, and it goes about 250 feet is what it would have to take to get all the way outside the pyramid. These little 8-inch cubes, so to speak, going 250 feet, you can imagine the ability to be able to engineer that. So about halfway up is this blockage. But they do know, because the King's Star shafts go all the way up, that the Queen's probably most likely do as well.
Well, I want to ask a fair question, Desiree, and what we should tell the audience is we were there in 77 with gas lasers looking from the outside down some of the chamber openings. The star shafts were measured, were calculated, and we wrote about this in 1973, 20 years before Robert Bevel. So Irving Gilbert had just come out and said that we were there really at the very beginning to show the connection between the Great Pyramid and the Belt of Orion.
Wait, Dr. Hertog, so let me ask you, so the King's Chamber, I've been in the King's Chamber, you're saying their starway passages are open and they go to the outside, but the Queen's Chamber has these little doors in their star passages, right?
And so far they have not made any connectiveness with the outer shell.
Why would you suppose the ancient Egyptians would put these little copper doors in the way of those star chambers?
Well, if you look at all of the great tombs along the valley,
mm-hmm.
at Dendera, for example, you go up the winding stairway, and the staircases were used by the priests for a great procession. Then you see these wonderful decorations, these wonderful reliefs in full detail
mm-hmm.
on all sides, depicting, in the case of Dendera, Hathor and the gods, and also the son of Hathor connected with music.
Mm-hmm.
You realize that there's a whole teaching that's connected with the use of the fine arts. And it's very, very rare, of course, to find inside the Great Pyramid the copper handles or what seems to be the outer embellishments on these doors. So this leads some Egyptologists to think that these are just preliminary or antechamber-like shafts to an ongoing shaft that would have more embellishments and probably solve the mystery of why those copper elements are there, copper being a sacred metal that was used by many cultures of antiquity.
Well,
and connected with royalty and the rays of the sun. The chambers of the Great Pyramid suggest, according to most Egyptologists, the route that the soul would take as it exits the inner chambers en route back to Orion, which would be the mothering constellation or the fathering constellation for soul advancement.
So to wrap up, because we're almost out of time, and to just see how this connects full circle, is that these ancient structures were built probably in assistance with extraterrestrial consciousnesses, and our rediscovery of this will also reconnect us to our galactic family as a way
to
connect
that. Well, don't jump ahead of us, because we don't worship Egyptian gods. They're simply symbolic of the higher physics of the universe, and Zahi Hawass would say certainly the extraterrestrials had nothing to do with this, and we would say at this point, let's not come to that conclusion. Let's look at earlier pre-dynastic architects, engineers, and astronomers of the genius category that put together what we believe to be one of the most fantastic structures of all time. The ancients called the seventh wonder of the world, which shows a higher physics, astronomy, musicology, and acoustical science all put together as one.
And if you see the fact that Orion is significant in terms of the Giza Plateau and then in terms of the Great Pyramid, and you realize that our Earth is actually out on an arm, which the new astronomers are calling the Orion arm of the local galaxy, you realize that this could just be a model of who we are in terms of larger universe. And so it's not extraterrestrials as much as it is a cosmic roadmap for our own evolutionary consciousness.
What we're saying is there is, in the history of the human race, a much greater perspective historically going back, that there may have been a generation of superminds behind the beginning of myth itself on our planet. We don't have to go to far-fetched conclusions, but we need to trace back the footprints of the human race, recognizing that in a very dramatic sense, the findings in Egypt, we believe, in the next couple of years could bring about a higher ground to resolve the different religious, philosophical, and cultural differences and nuances that have come down for the last 5,000-6,000 years.
Thank you both. I'm just about out of time. I've been talking to Dr. Hertog and Desiree Hertog, the founders of the Academy for Future Science. Just give your website before we leave.
We have keysofenoch.org and futurescience.org.
Okay. Thank you. I'm just going to just say goodbye to this program. Thank you both very much. I love the stuff you've touched upon, and it's stuff we will continue on other shows with these guests and with other guests in the field of ancient civilizations and UFOs and alternative consciousness and how we're evolving as a spiritual race on the planet. My name's Alan Steinfeld. And this is New Realities. And if you have any questions, please email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. I'll be on every Sunday on this internet radio station, every Sunday, 9:30. I welcome your comments. I'll read the comments on the air. If you have any questions, please call me. I'm going to end with this song by Duke Williams and the Extremes, which is a song which is about some of the topics we've talked about on this program. Thank you for listening.
Just like you start and run it.